There are 7 concentric rings called spheres. The region nearest the Earth is known as the first or rudimental sphere. It really blends with your Earth sphere. It is just one step higher in vibration. Growing more intense and increasing in action are 6 more, distinguished as the spiritual spheres. Theses are all zones or circles of exceeding fine matter encompassing the Earth like belts or girdles, each separate from the other and regulated by fixed laws. They are not shapeless fancies or mental projections, but absolute entities, just as tangible as the planets of the solar system, or the Earth on which you reside. They have latitude and longitude and atmosphere of peculiarly vitalized vapor. The undulating currents, soft and balmy, are invigorating and pleasurable. Although the spheres revolve with the Earth on a common axis, forming the same angle with the plane of the ecliptic, and move with it about your sun, they are not dependent upon that sun for either light or heat. They receive not a perceptible ray from that ponderable source. We receive our light emanations, he said, wholly from a great central source, from which comes uninterrupted splendor. Baffling description. I can readily appreciate that spirit people along the frontier and among the rudimentary spheres cannot tell how many there are beyond, and may not all agree, but here is what another says on the subject. There are innumerable spheres in the spirit world. If it were not so, progression would be a myth. Some tell you that there are only 7. That is because they have no knowledge beyond that sphere. I do not mean a place fixed by boundaries, for the spheres or degrees in spirit life are only conditions and are not confined to a limited space. As a soul develops, it naturally arises above its surroundings and consequently experiences a change in its spheres or conditions. Impressed with the suggestion concerning Jupiter and Saturn, I examined the works of the foremost astronomers, and this is, in substance, what they say. Jupiter is marked with bands, more or less wide, more or less intense, which show perfectly near its equatorial region. Saturn has a number of what appear to be broad, flat rings surrounding it, but separated from it on all sides, which lie all in the same plane of inclination to the ecliptic. The inner and broader of the two belts or zones is the brightest near the outer part, and shades off toward the planet, gradually at first, more rapidly afterward. Its inner portion is so dark that at one time it was regarded separate and called crape or dusty ring. Modern telescopes show the inner part of this ring transparent. The physical constitution of the rings is unlike that of any other known objects in our solar system. They are not formed of a continuous mass of solid or liquid matter, but of discrete particles of unknown minuteness, probably widely separated in proportion to their individual volume, yet so close as to appear continuous. To know the location of the next plane helps one to appreciate conditions that exist there. Our finite minds can comprehend little that we have not actually experienced, and so we mentally grope in our efforts to comprehend what is told us of those more advanced spheres, and must in a measure rely on deductive reasoning. I also have found that spirit people do not agree in many respects, any more than we do. Each reports according to his knowledge and understanding, therefore, each must form his own conclusions, based on reason. In order to get another expression, I read what I have written to drive David Hossack, one of the leaders of the spirit group with whom I worked so many years, and for whose statements I have great respect, and in reply he said, "What appears as space about your earth is composed of ether. There are 3 distinct circles, the outer filled with more radiant vibrations than those within. Beyond these, the spheres or circles blend with those of other planets. Each circle is very, very many miles in depth, according to your standard of measurement." I am much impressed with such statements, as they seem natural and appeal to reason. So far as I know, no one has heretofore attempted actually to locate and fix the boundaries of the afterlife. 2,000 years of Christian teaching have not enabled a reasoning mind to form any definite conclusions as to where that place called heaven is, or concerning the conditions prevailing where the so-called dead reside, and it seems quite time that we have a scientific explanation, or at least a start along the road. When Columbus discovered the continent of North America, the whole world at once accepted the fact, changed their ideas about the Earth's shape, and still celebrate his achievement. The psychic investigators within the last 75 years have discovered not a continent but millions of inhabited worlds, and now actually locate the planes, begin to understand the substances that compose them, and know something of the light that fills those zones, achievements that transcend all discoveries of modern times. Our descriptions, so concise and brief, but serve as texts, however, and from them we must make deductions and bring understanding to ourselves. It will be noted that there is a similarity between the circles or rings about our Earth, and those of Jupiter and Saturn. Our astronomers contend that these circles or rings are not formed of a continuous mass of solid or liquid substance, but of discrete particles of unknown minuteness, unlike any other visible objects in our solar system. These statements demonstrate that matter has phases or conditions not generally understood by Earth dwellers. Those who have spoken, Faraday, Denton and Hossack, and others above quoted, are in a position to know something of the substance that fills that plane, and they all say it is ether. And what is ether? Our encyclopedias explain it as the upper, purer air, the abode of the gods. Our astronomers say that it is a hypothetical medium of extreme tenuity and elasticity, supposed to be diffused throughout all space. Spirit people say that ether is matter similar to Earth substance, but in a very high state of vibration. According to them, the universe is all material, substance or matter in different and varying states of vibration, and those rings, circles or envelopes that surround this Earth of ours are just as substantial, visible, real and tangible as anything we have. Those zones vibrate in substantially direct proportion to our thoughts, and may well be called the mental plane. No thoughtful person can read these statements from distinguished and scientific spirits without being impressed, and without drawing from them rational deductions. Beyond the visible is the true field of discovery. Here secrets are veiled from physical sight, and the mental powers, based on the statements of spirit people, are the only means available to push discovery to its ultimate. I know that these gentlemen made the statements quoted. The world counted them not only honest but great scientists, when they resided here. Their statements appear in accordance with nature's tendency. They are rational and I accept them, and, basing my opinion thereon and on other knowledge obtained from persons in the afterlife, I state without qualification that about this Earth there are material concentric belts or zones, composed of ether, which become more radiant and higher in vibration as they extend outward. In these zones all the so-called dead reside and have their homes, where the family relation is ultimately restored. For the first time the local habitations of spirit people have been discovered and the spheres or zones can now be named. Chapter 6 Voices of the Dead. In 1890, on the trial of an action before one of our judges, he called me to the bench during an intermission, and exhibited some slates that purported to contain messages from dead people. I examined them, and laughed at the suggestion. This was immediately followed by a statement that the night before he had talked, voice to voice, with them. I was incensed that he should state such an absurd proposition. I felt that if communication with the dead was possible, it would have been known from the beginning. Filled with indignation, I turned and went on with the trial. This man stood high in the community, had the appearance of being sane, and I could not account, at the time, for what seemed to me an irrational mental condition. I am wondering whether or not some who read this presentation will not, at first, view my statements as I viewed those of this able judge. It is a fact to be noted, that every man's vision, everyone's conception, is to him normal, and, when a fact is stated that is not within his experience or in accord with his understanding, the tendency is to contradict and ridicule, rather than to investigate, weigh, and consider with an open mind, fairly and without prejudice. I did not then know that a seed had been planted in fertile soil, and, though I then condemned it and later, with all my mental powers alert, endeavored to destroy it, that the time would come when from actual experience I should comprehend the truth of such contention and should understand how it was done. My early experience prevents me from criticizing others who do not and cannot now accept as true what is here stated as a fact. comprehension and acceptance of these discoveries, so beyond the average experience, must be of slow growth, and come from individual research and deductive reasoning, but it may now be said that there is much more known, and more literature on this subject, than when I commenced my research work. Therefore, knowledge can be more quickly obtained. In my early efforts to disprove what was, to my mind, a growing evil, I examined every known method by which it was claimed that those in the afterlife could communicate with those in this life. I will treat the more important methods in what follows. /table tipping/. Whenever spirit people get a message through, they must utilize what Crookes terms psychic force. All persons do not possess it, but ordinarily about 1 in 5 does. If that number sit about a table, with hands upon it, frequently spirits can intelligently answer questions by tapping or by actual movement of the table. This is the most primitive and, at the same time, the most undesirable of all methods, because of the difficulty of obtaining proof of identity. Spirit people deliberately, and sometimes mischievously, impersonate a person asked for, and, when this is discovered, doubt is cast on the genuineness of the manifestation. Scientific investigators do not advise such practice. /planchette and Ouija board/. These can be operated only by one who likewise possesses psychic or mediumistic abilities. Spirit people, using that force in conjunction with their own, operate these instruments, but they are open to the same objections as the process above mentioned and should be operated only by those who understand the process fully. In their use, much that is unreliable is obtained. This does not condemn the phenomena, but lessens the value of the results obtained. /slate writing/. There is no question about the genuineness of this phenomenon, but few possess that peculiar force which is needed for this purpose. When a psychic is found like Pierre Keeler, now of Washington, spirits can write between slates by his aid with great freedom. One of my first experiments was with this man, at which time I received a message in handwriting that I recognized. I could not then accept what I received as in fact a message from the beyond. It was beyond my experience then, but I know now that this method, with an honest medium, is reliable. /clairvoyance/clairaudience/. The first is the ability of one still in the physical body to see, and the latter is the ability psychically to hear, spirit people, and to tell how they look, who they are, and to repeat what they say. Usually a psychic or medium possesses both faculties. With an honest medium, spiritually and properly developed, this method is reliable, otherwise it is not. /trance/. There are two phases of this condition. The complete trance occurs when a spirit causes the body of the medium temporarily to vacate the physical tenement, of which for the moment it takes possession, using the medium's physical organs of speech. Then there is the semi-trance, where the medium tells what he sees, and what spirit people say. Communication, in this manner, is possible, but it is not always satisfactory because of the opportunity for deceit. It is under this guise that fortune tellers prey on the public, to the detriment of this philosophy and to the loss of the dupes who patronize them. I am told by my spirit friends that spirit people know no more of events which will occur in the future than we do. Therefore, the laws that prohibit fortune-telling by ignorant and dishonest persons are just and necessary. That unfortunate practice has brought this whole work into disrepute in the minds of many people, and every earnest investigator deeply regrets it. /automatic writing/. In the hands of a fine man or woman, spiritually developed and honest, this method is very useful. Phases of mediumship differ, so that we seldom find a psychic that has more than one phase. It seems to require different psychic force for the different methods. There are two phases of this method: the first, where a person goes into a complete trance, in which case spirit people manipulate the hand and actually write; the second, where the psychic is fully conscious, in this case the messages and answers to questions are suggested to, and heard through, his subconscious brain, dictated, as I dictate to my stenographer. /materialization/. Physical demonstrations are possible. Spirit people under certain conditions can, and do temporarily clothe their bodies with a physical substance, so that they are, for the moment, visible, and, to the touch, natural. This also requires the presence of a medium from whom a force or substance is taken, as it is taken from others present. / The direct or independent voice / This is by far the most satisfactory method of all, for the voice is recognized, and it is easy to prove identity in this manner. This requires darkness, but so sensitive is the condition required, the vibrations must be slower than in daylight, and they are in a darkened room. In this method, the organs of speech of a spirit are temporarily clothed with physical substance taken in part from those present and from the psychic. The spirit group contribute also, and the combined substance blended together is precipitated on the vocal organs of the spirit person. Then the voice of a spirit actually reaches our ears. But for this condition, though spirits might speak, they would not be heard by one who, like myself, does not possess mediumistic powers. There are many mediums who have something of this ability. There are, however, only a few so highly developed that the voices are heard clear, strong and full, as in earth life. I worked many years improving the mediumship of Mrs. French, so that the voices of spirit people came full-toned. We succeeded in accomplishing this, and for many years, until the dissolution of this wonderful psychic, I talked not with 100 but with thousands of spirits, a majority of whom, perhaps, I had intimately known in their earth life. It would require many volumes to print the record obtained in all the years of my research work. I am not attempting to do so, I simply state as a fact that I have done these things, and explain how it is done, in hope that the facts will appeal to reason, through which all knowledge comes. I hope that what I write will be of such character and dignity, and will so appeal to the common sense of the public, that they will think rather than condemn. So mighty is the force of human thought, and so delicate are the conditions of a spirit's body when it has taken on material in preparation for speech, that, by word of command, or even by thought projection, I can break down conditions and prevent speech. This is why those who oppose this philosophy so often get negative results when they seek demonstration, for by their mental attitude or thought conditions, they make impossible the very thing they seek. They so intensify their thought substance that spirit people are not able to break into the conditions they make for the occasion. Each voice has individuality. When new spirits come for the first time and take on the condition of vocalization, there is often a similarity in tone quality, but this soon passes away, as they grow accustomed to using their voices in this way. The voices of those accustomed to speak never change, and are easily recognized. There is no similarity of thought or words. These differ with different people in that world as in this. The strength of the voices varies greatly. One of our group always speaks with sufficient volume to fill easily a great auditorium, and his lectures ring through the whole house. Another, whom I have in mind, always comes with great courtesy, is careful in speech and considerate, but his voice, while very distinct, has no great volume. The voice of another, who was very near to me in earth life, is as clear, strong and natural as in the days when we discussed this philosophy, or walked in the forest about the cabin, trying to come in touch with the principle of life, and since his going we have talked as much, and with as great freedom, as in the latter years before his going. There has been no subject of knowledge common to us both, that he ever hesitated to discuss in all its minutest details. This friendship of many years is continued without a break, and I have enjoyed his presence and our talks as I never did before. One evening a stranger spoke, who said he was a physician of Philadelphia. He was brought in that help might be given to complete the separation from his physical body. When he finally became fully conscious, he told his name, the number of his residence, and much about himself. The papers the next morning had a full account of his death early the evening before. In the beginning, much time was wasted in proving the identity of strange spirits who were allowed to talk, and in verifying what they said concerning themselves. I know that spirit people, as a rule, are as prone to deceive as mortals. At one time, few men of my acquaintance passed on who did not come and speak with me, but later the time was devoted to obtaining more information concerning this new philosophy, that the greatest good might come to the greatest number. Hundreds, at my invitation, have participated in the work and with me have heard different voices with different tones, different thoughts, different personalities, and at times in different foreign languages. No spirit was at liberty to come into our room without the invitation of the spirit group or of myself, any more than a stranger would come into my house uninvited for social purposes. The same laws of privilege and hospitality which operate in the earth life prevail in the spirit world. There was opposition to this work in spirit spheres in the beginning, just as it is opposed now in this world. Some churches exist as institutions in the afterlife, and are just as jealous of their domination there as here. In our earliest work these opponents often tried to prevent speech by interrupting and disorganizing the circle, fearing that the truth might cause loss of temporal as well as spiritual power both here and there. Great efforts were made by the spirit group and ourselves to maintain conditions and keep them out. I recall one evening, when my stenographer was taking a lecture in shorthand, that a Catholic priest in the spirit world gained admittance. Such was his strength that he suddenly wrenched the stenographic book from the hands of the stenographer, and threw it with great violence against the wall of the room. Our group finally forced him out and, as he was leaving, I heard him say, "What can one man do among so many millions? What a privilege was mine!" Night after night, through long years, with the aid of Emily S. French, I talked with thousands of the living dead, in my own home, and from them I learned all that I am telling here, learned more than I can ever write. Remember that spirit people have the same inner body as when it was physically housed in this earth life, and, given the required help, can, and will, speak as before. If this may be said to be a new discovery, it is of greater importance than any since the dawn of civilization. Chapter 7 Materiality of the Universe. It is most difficult for the human mind to comprehend that anything which sight or sense does not disclose is material. The idea that what we call space is substantial and real, and composed of matter, the same as those things that are visible, presents a proposition difficult of acceptance. We know so little of matter's physical properties. If those in the afterlife live and progress in a world as substantial and material as this, have houses and other structures and buildings, if that plain has forests and fields and growing grain, flowers, mountains, meadow lands and flowing streams, then that world is as substantial and real and composed of the same substance as this, varying only in vibratory action. As a matter of fact, these two worlds or conditions now blend, one with the other. What we see, feel and touch, only clothes visible life. Through nature, as we use that word, the spirit world functions and has temporary physical expression. This fact science is just coming to understand, but as yet little is known of the constituent parts of matter that fill the universe, whether physical or spiritual. Heretofore matter has been known in but three conditions, solid, liquid and gaseous. Sir William Crookes, the learned English chemist, while endeavoring to create a vacuum in a glass tube, discovered a fourth condition, which he named the radiant state. The atoms, freed by rarefaction, assume in this relative vacuum vibratory motions of intense and incalculable rapidity. They become flambant and produce effects of light and electrical radiations. This suggests a clue to most of the cosmic phenomena. Variously condensed, in its three first conditions, matter in the radiant state loses a number of its properties, such as density, shape, color and weight, but in this newfound realm, it appears to be more closely and intimately related to the force which is life. This fourth aspect is another condition which matter is susceptible of assuming. The mind can picture a subtle, hyperfluidic state, as superior to the radiant condition as the radiant is superior to the gaseous, or the liquid to the solid. Science will in the future solve this problem and find an answer to such age-long and formidable problems as the unity of substance, or the preponderating forces of the universe. Matter, in its higher and more refined vibrations, becomes a fluid of infinite suppleness and elasticity, by endless combinations of which all bodies are engendered. In its primordial essence invisible, impalpable, imponderable. This fluid, through successive transitions, becomes ponderable and capable of producing, by powerful condensation, those hard, opaque and weighty bodies which constitute the base of terrestrial matter. This state of cohesion is, however, transitory. Matter, rescinding the ladder of its transformations, can as readily be disaggregated and returned to its primitive fluidic state. All matter is composed of molecules, atoms and electrons. The smallest particle that can be detected by the human eye through the microscope is about 25 times larger than a molecule. The molecule is composed of atoms which individually are about 1/300,000,000th of an inch in diameter, while the electron, as the ultimate subdivision of matter, has a diameter 100,000 less than the atom. There would be 30 trillions of electrons to the inch, each one clothing life that is force. It must, therefore, be admitted first of all that nothing we see around us is absolutely solid. A mass of anything, whether it is metal, rock or other apparently dense and solid substance, does not exist as such. Cohesion of particles is relative only in proportion to weight, and each particle of a mass is relatively distant from the others, allowing space for the free passage of the ether, light such as the X-ray radio energy, which is life expressed in substance. Professors Thompson and Tort say that if a drop of water could be magnified to the size of the Earth, we should see the atoms about as big as oranges, and that electrons are about 1,000 times smaller. Sir William Crookes, when elected president of the British Association for the Advancement of Science, in 1898, said in a remarkable address that all of the phenomena of the universe are presumably continuous waves, and that we have good evidence that they range from one vibration to 2,000 trillions per second, thus varying in their frequency and also in their velocity. As a starting point, he said, "I will take a pendulum beating seconds in air. If I keep on doubling, I get a series of steps, as follows. Starting point vibrations per second. Step 1. 2 2, 4 3, 8 4, 16. 5. 32 6. 64 7 dot 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 256 sound 9 dot 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 1 0 7 3 7 8 4 15 dot 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 1 0 4 8 and 576 25 83 554 and 432 electrical rays 30 1 0 7 3 700 and 41 820 4 35 dot 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 34 comma 359 700 and 38 300 and 68 40 dot 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 d 1 963, 968 unknown 58.